we have spent more than we have earned and now must borrow $10 trillion from our children to keep from going belly up. To make it possible for our children to pay our debt, which is compounded annually, we will most likely have to grow our population by having more children or allowing for more immigration. This leads us to ask, how will we feed all those people?
Welcome to the award-winning Food Chain Show with your host, Michael Olson. Now, get ready for an hour of What's Eating What Radio.
Well, hello out there. You are tuned to the 610th edition of the Food Chain right here on News Talk Radio. Hey, perhaps you're among our friends over there in Frankfurt who are tuned in as we stream along on the Food Chain page at metrofarm.com. Well, whoever you are and wherever you are, welcome aboard. I am Michael Olson, your host for this hour of What's Eating What Radio with engineer Dave Michaels. You're going to say hi, Dave?
Yeah, glad to be here.
Okay, Carol Stafford is working the phones. Parmalee Taff and Karen Howard? All right, good. Folks, the objective was noble, if not a bit fanciful. Make it possible for everyone to own a home, regardless of whether they have the resources to pay for that home or not. To make this political dream a reality, our government borrowed $1 trillion from our children, and it came to pass that everyone who wanted a home could own a home. No questions asked. There were, of course, many such political dreams coursing through the halls of government, and the new politicians banging on the door right now are promising many, many more dreams as well. As a consequence, you and I now owe $10 trillion, compounded annually, and that debt will likely grow by 50% or more within the next few years, and it, too, will be compounded annually. How much is $10 trillion? Well, start by writing a 1 and then followed by a 0 on a piece of paper. Then start adding zeros until you get out there to the moon, and that's $10 trillion. To pay this debt, you and I can either tax ourselves or borrow the money from our children. Sorry, kids. Obviously, we are asking a lot from our children. Can we not help them by having more children and by allowing for more immigration? More people could mean a smaller debt load for each person. And so today we ask, should we increase the size of our population? Here to help us explore the question we have, Vicki Markham. Vicki is the director for the Center for Environment and Population. Vicki, welcome to the Food Chain.
Hello, thank you very much. Glad to be here.
Hey, tell us a little bit about the Center for Environment and Population.
Sure, I'd be very happy to. We are a nonprofit research, policy, and advocacy organization. We're based on the East Coast in Connecticut, but we are a national and international organization. And what we do is we take really kind of very complicated but the most cutting-edge scientific information, and we package it and put it into terms that every person on the street could understand. And we do that in the form of kind of groundbreaking reports that we release to the press and materials that every person can use in their city or town or suburban community, and also in schools. And we also provide it for policymakers. And we mainly just look at the links between population factors in the U.S. at the national level, kind of national population trends, and also regional trends, and then state-by-state and community trends. And very specifically, though, how they are linked to the environment, to the all different sectors of the environment, to the agricultural sector, to water, forests, climate change, energy, land use, and so on.
And that's most certainly what we're shooting for today. We're looking for Stephen Mosher, who is the president of the Population Research Institute, but we don't know where he is. We'll try to track him down. Vicki, let me start with you. Let's talk a little bit about, well, first of all, who pays your way? We always like to ask who pays the way.
Oh, yeah. You know, it's always good to know where the person and where the organization is coming from. I think that's a helpful framework for your listeners. We are a nonpartisan, nonprofit, independent organization. We get our money just from a whole range of different foundations. One of the main purposes of our group is just to present very balanced, as balanced as possible information as we can, so that the reader or the listener or the viewer, so that the average person can make up their own mind. So we just kind of try to present the facts in ways that people...
Well, who pays your way, though?
Different foundations. We range from... You mean you want the names of the foundations?
Well, just give us an example.
MacArthur, Hewlett... have been supporters in the past. Just some of the larger foundations that support kind of scientific research and public outreach of that research.
Okay, good. Well,
but it's a nonpartisan. It's really very much, there's no links to either kind of platforms in either way.
Fair enough. Well, let's start with the first question I have today, and that is, what effect does our economy have on our population? I may be wrong, but it seems as though whenever we as a country get into a financial bind of one kind or another, we always try to grow ourselves out of it. You get into debt, we, expand our economy, and the economy takes care of our problems, and we keep on going. More people working begets more money for all kind of thing. And I remember when President Ronald Reagan opened the borders and essentially declared olly-olly oxen free for everybody that came into the country. And it seems like we've been trying to do pretty much the same thing relatively recently with respect to our open border policy and all of the immigrants that came pouring in, or just expanding our economy really quickly and perhaps taking care of some bills by doing so. Am I seeing things? Or does this really happen? I thought maybe you who look at population so closely could help me out with that.
I think that there's lots of things that you brought up here with regard to the economy and population. I think it's part of what you said, but it's quite complex. I think if you're looking at the situation that the country is in today with regard to the economy, and then in our specialty, which is looking at it, let's say, with regard to the state of the environment, which is also, of course, linked to the economy.
Right.
Energy is a great case in point. Then I think it's a little bit of both. But I do think that, so it's a mixture of population numbers, the numbers of people, and each country is different. But let's take the states for an example. If you look at the case of the United States, certainly, the economy is somewhat based on, a workforce that we can have here.
Right.
How
many people are, making a wages and paying taxes?
Right. And then also require the services that those taxes provide. So you do, you may be making more money, but then you have more people which are depending on that tax base for their education and health care and things like that, and the services that you get in your community. But it's also a case we are finding, it is a question of numbers, and that's why population comes into it. And the U.S. really stands out because it is the largest and the fastest growing industrialized nation in the world. So we do play a major role in this. It's not as if the population is just growing outside of the U.S. So our population growth really is an issue. But the other factor that is absolutely key linked with the numbers of people in the U.S. is what they do, what they consume, and then the pollution that goes along with that. Because, we have about just over 304 million people now. We hit the 300 million mark a couple of years ago.
301 point some odd million?
Well, no, right now we have over 304 million.
304? That's faster than the Internet can keep up.
But the key, with that is that our country is the fastest growing large industrialized nation in the world, and that's significant. Because we also consume by far the highest rate of natural resources, energy, water, forest products, land, than any other nation in the world.
Well, still, that leaves those who are coming of age, with this incredible debt. And let me get back to my original premise here. We are spending more than we earn. Much, much more. We're $10 trillion in debt and probably going to be much more than that in debt here in the next few years. And So what impact is that going to have on our children? Because when it gets right down to it, we are not going to pay for this, all of this fun that we're having. We're not going to tax ourselves. We're going to foist it off onto our children. And if we don't expand the population, their population, they're going to be stuck with a burden that is unsurmountable. They won't be able to pay for it all. So where does that leave us in terms of population?
Well, I mean, I think no matter what, no matter if we're trying to correct the debt with population numbers or not, it's going to happen. I mean, I think the U.S. is going to be growing. We add 8,000 people a day.
Okay, we're going to have to take a quick break, Vicki. We will be right back.
Okay.
Folks, do stay tuned. Thank you very much.
Get this. The average acre of farmland in or near the city limits may earn in excess of $123,000 per year. To learn how so much can be earned from so little, pick up a copy of Metro Farm, the guide to growing for big profit on a small parcel of land. Metro Farm is the PMA Ben Franklin Book of the Year Award winner by Michael Olson that contains over 500 pages of photos, charts, checklists, illustrations, and in-depth interviews. Metro Farm will teach you how to develop a strategy, survey markets, select crops, organize business, establish production, prepare for market, and make the sale. Metro Farm will teach you how others just like you earn a good living by growing high-value specialty crops for people who are truly appreciative. Abraham Lincoln said, "The greatest fine art of the future will be the making of a comfortable living from a small parcel of land." Get in on that future today. Pick up a copy of Metro Farm at bookstores, lawn and garden supply stores, 1-800-624-BOOK, or at www.metrofarm.com.
Well, folks, you and I are $10 trillion in debt, and most likely that debt is going to grow significantly here in the next few years. The government is bailing us out with shovelfuls of hundreds of billions of dollars here and there and everywhere. And, of course, they're not going to pay for that. They're not going to force us to pay for that. So who's going to pay for that? Well, our children, of course. So how on earth does anyone think that politicians will actually force us to pay up front for their political dreaming? Or will they always foist the pain onto our children? Will there ever be an end to that dreaming? And what impact is that going to have on our children? It seems to me that the only solution here is to greatly expand our population so that the burden on the individual children won't be so great. And thus, a terrible thing to look forward to in our country. How many people is it going to take? How many children is it going to take in this country to pay for our bills? We have 300 plus million today, 304 million, Vicki says.
Mm-hmm.
Tomorrow, will we need 600 million? Or will we need 900 million? And what will happen to our country if such is the case? Somebody has to pay for our bills. Who is it going to be? It's going to be our children, because you and I are not going to pay for it. Our politicians are not going to ask us to pay for it. So what is going to happen to our economy, and what is going to happen to our population? We're talking with Vicki Markham out there on the East Coast. Vicki is the director of the Center for Environment and Population. Vicki, has anybody come to you with this notion before and put it on the table?
They have not suggested that by growing our population, that would be the silver bullet to, helping the economy. No.
Mm-hmm.
Because it's, the population is going to grow. And if that's just...
Yes, but why is it going to grow?
It's going to grow for two reasons. The same way it grows in every other country in the world, it grows both by natural increase,
mm-hmm.
which is...
people having babies?
The birth minus death, yes.
Mm-hmm.
So that's kind of the natural increase of the people that are already here.
What is our natural increase rate right now?
And then the second way is by, immigration.
Immigration, of course.
Into a place. It's about 50-50 right now. It just switched over the line recently.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, the majority of it is from natural increase right now in our country, less so from immigration. And that can change, you know, in the future it may be quite different. But if you just look at a snapshot right now of the country, the majority is from natural increase. But, you know, you have to acknowledge that it's happening from both ways. But I think just to say that the economy will be fixed if we bring more people in is probably, that might be a little bit flat in our thinking, because then if you do that, then you've got, you know, if you think that's going to fix the only thing mm-hmm. that's going to fix the economy, it's not really viable because...
Why isn't it viable?
Well, because you're going to have then a lot more people that you have to support with more and more taxes. It's not realistic. I think, you know, the way to fix the economy is to generate jobs and income that is going to kind of reflect what's really happening in the country, which is, you know, probably having to become less dependent on foreign oil. So that's one example of how we're probably...
Yeah, but that still doesn't address the spending that we are doing today. I mean, you know, we're $10 trillion in the hole.
It definitely addresses, you know, strengthening. The thing is, not one thing does address the economy. There has to be a number of factors that happen at the same time.
And let me ask you this. What did you think when Ronald Reagan opened up the floodgates to immigration? I sat there and scratched my head for a while and thought, what is he doing? Allowing for, and he was the president that allowed for amnesty. He said, "Ollie, oxen free. Anybody who can be a citizen. We want you. We need you. Come here." Why was he saying that?
I mean, I think that probably reflected the times then. You know, where they, you know, they felt that they really needed to, you know, have that happen. I think things are much more complicated now. And
but weren't we doing the same thing now? I mean, we've had this incredible immigration over the past, I don't know, 10 years or so. People have been flooding into the country, and neither party has said no. Neither party has stood up and has address the issue one way or the other. It's almost like...
Well, they have addressed the issue in a lot of ways. They just have different views about it. But, I mean, America has opened their borders for over 200 years. So it's a country of immigrants. So that's America.
Well, Vicki, do you think with our normal birth rate or the normal population growth that our children will be able to pay our debts, which are compounded annually?
I think they will if there are government and other private incentives for the debt to be reduced and for the economy to be strengthened.
But the government incentives are either spending money that they don't have or taxing us.
I think that's why, you know, so many people... I think that's why, no matter who you're for in this presidential election... And in, you know, the state elections now that they're holding, is that I think that's why you are seeing a groundswell of interest in change, because clearly what has been happening in the past has mm-hmm. not been effective.
Well, the change that we really need is for somebody to come in with some fiscal responsibility and stop foisting all of their political dreams on our children.
Mm-hmm.
Because we're not paying for any of these things. We're just foisting them off on our children.
Well, we are paying
$10 trillion worth of
it. I mean, if you ask the people who are just now sending their kids to college or who are just now retiring, they are paying for it. Of course they are.
No, we're not. We're borrowing hugely. Debt is we're paying part of it, of
I
course.
Meant paying for it in the reduced quality of life is what I meant.
Well, okay, let's talk about what it would take, you know, for our children to be able to pay for our debts. I mean, what is it going to take, 900 million, a population of 900 million to pay for what we've got going here?
I don't know. I don't have those figures.
Let's speculate as to what would happen then if we actually did expand our population to pay for this economy. And this is where you come in, because you're the one ones who are really looking at population and environment. What would happen? You know, I see China with its 1.3 billion people. And, you know, we could do this because we have much more arable land than China does. So we could support a population as big as China and survive somehow. But when I look at China, I can't even see it anymore because of the belching smokestacks from their coal-burning fireplace, you know, plants. So is that where we're going to go, to have to pay for the largesse that we're experiencing today? What will happen with our environment, Vicki?
Well, I think we already are seeing what is happening to the environment. I think we have already hit some thresholds which show that we have gone, we've crossed the line from a healthy environment to a not healthy environment in certain sectors, and climate change is the perfect example.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you pretty much have consensus among the leading scientists in the world, which says that we emitted too much CO2 into the atmosphere through fossil fuel burning, and so we are changing the climate to an extent that has never happened in the history of the planet because of human-induced activities.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think that is a huge sign to us that we are stepping, you know, across the carrying capacity of, you know, the Earth to, you know, with the greenhouse gas.
And here is the rub. We have a carrying capacity for our Earth, and we have a carrying capacity for our debt. And it seems like we're having a conflict here because the carrying capacity of our debt far exceeds our population's ability to pay for it.
Mm-hmm. And, but, you know, I think that there's a fallacy of what...
Wait, hold on. I'm going to take a quick break, and when we come back, you can point up my fallacy,
okay,
and I'll be happy to hear it. Right back, folks. Well, folks, it was a pretty good dream. Make it possible for everyone to own a home, regardless of whether they have the resources to pay for that home or not. To make this political dream a reality, our government borrowed $1 trillion from our children, and it came to pass that everyone who wanted a home could own a home, no questions asked. There were, of course, many such political dreams coursing through the halls of government, and the new politicians banging on the door are promising many, many more dreams that our children, of course, will have to pay for. As a consequence, you and I now owe $10 trillion compounded annually, and the debt will likely grow by 50% or more within the next few years, and it, too, will be compounded annually. To pay this debt, you and I can either tax ourselves or borrow the money from the children. Sorry, kids. It's just going to be you that pays the way. But that's what I say, and I don't know everything. And Vicki Markham says that I have a fallacy in my thought, and I'm perfectly willing to hear it. Vicki, fire away.
Hi. Sure. Well, I mean, I believe that, you know, that it is a fallacy to say that the economic position that we are in now and the debt that we're in now is because of population factors, or that it...
No, I didn't say that.
Well, or that it could be fixed, you know, from population factors, because you have to look at the causes of something in order to see how you can fix it.
Mm-hmm. I think that's how we've tried to address those problems, is by increasing the size of our population, thus...
Yeah, but I'm saying we haven't. We haven't tried to fix that by increasing our population.
Oh, well, what was Ronald Reagan doing when he opened the borders? And recently, the politicians, by opening the borders, it seems like whenever we get into a fix, we open the borders.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think that's, you know, it was directly linked to fixing our debt. I mean...
Ah, what was it linked to then?
Well, I don't know. You know, well, like I said, I think it was back then when Reagan was president. It's very, very different era now. And so what we would do with...
Why is it different? It seems like we were doing the same thing recently that Reagan was doing, which was opening the borders to immigration. So that, and I don't know why they did it, but I just sat back and thought, well, you know, to increase the size of the economy, and then that bails out economic problems that we have.
Mm-hmm. But, yeah, I definitely don't think that that's the solution to fixing them today, though.
Okay, well, I'm not sure it's a solution, but I'm throwing it out as a, I think that's what they were doing. But let's ask Stephen Mosher, who is president of the Population Research Institute. Stephen, calling in from the beautiful Shenandoah River Valley. I think that's where you're at, Stephen. Is that true?
I am. We're located in the Shenandoah Valley, which today, unfortunately, is in the midst of a rather major storm.
Oh.
So I'm joining you late here and getting late into the conversation.
Well,
but I'm fascinated by what I hear.
So the essential comment is, you know, we wanted to deal with population today here on the food chain and what's eating what radio. And I just was scratching my head when I was pulling some notes together for this program and noting the fact that when you Google the U.S. national debt, it says that we owe $10 trillion. And our politicians are throwing money around, you know, by the hundreds of millions of dollars here and there and everywhere. And so obviously we're going to not pay for that ourselves, of course, but so we're going to borrow it from our children. And so I look at this tremendous debt load that we're handing our children and wondering if we shouldn't help them out by increasing the size of our population so that each child will not have to spend so much money taking care of our fun times here. That's
well,
am
know,
I crazy?
Look, there are two ways to increase or decrease the population. One way is by immigration or out migration, you know, people coming into the country and people leaving. The other, I would dare say, more natural way, of course, is by encouraging a higher birth rate.
Mm-hmm.
And if you look back at the reports of the Social Security Trust Fund trustees over the years, as I have, they make it clear that for every one-tenth of a child increase in the total fertility rate, that we prolong the solvency of the Social Security system by 3 or 4 years. And what that's saying is that if we're right now we're averaging about 2.1 children, if we went up to 2.2, the numbers work for another 3 or 4 years into the future. You go up to 2.3, the numbers work for another 3 or 4 years beyond that. And if we were back at 1960 and we were averaging a little over 3 children, the numbers work forever. No reduction in retirement benefits, no prolongation of the working age, postponement of the retirement age, which is now being talked about. We could still retire at 65, simply because there are more children being born, being educated, and coming into the workforce.
So my notion, my basic notion is kind of correct. You know, you have to have an expanding population to float the boat, as it were.
Well, to pay for the system as it's currently set up, and as you point out, the system is going further and further into the red as we speak, as we're trying to spend our way out of a looming recession that was brought on by irresponsible actions on Wall Street and irresponsible actions by people in the mortgage business.
And in the
government.
We're going
to be paying for those mistakes for a long, long time to come, and you're quite right. I mean, either we pay for them now by raising taxes, which, of course, is being discussed by certain of our presidential candidates, or by pushing the debt back on our children, borrowing money now from the Chinese, and then paying it back at high interest rates in the future. Of course,
Stephen, what are the odds of the politicians actually forcing us to pay for their bailout right now?
Well, I have to laugh because, you know, they're busily shoveling the blame on each other. I mean, the people in charge of the finance committees in the House and Senate, Congressman Barney Frank and Senator Chris Dodd are busy saying, well, it wasn't that we were asleep at the switch. It was the problem of the SEC. And then, you know, Chris Cox over at the SEC says, well, the decision to allow all the big investment banks to leverage up to 30-1, 40-1 was not my decision. It was made in 2004 before I came.
So here we have...
Everybody's, you know, pushing the blame on everybody else. I think there's enough blame in this to go around, by the way, and
Plenty.
I do think it started with the mortgage crisis in the late 90s when everyone, as you say, you know, was offered the American dream for free.
Yeah.
Well, I don't think it's their fault. I think it's our fault. I think that we are buying into a very big lie. And that lie is that we can have as much good times as we want and not have to pay for it.
Yeah.
And because we have bought into that lie, we are foisting onto our children a monumental debt that they are simply not going to be able to handle unless we do something to help them. And the only thing I can see that we can do to help them is to increase the population so that each child will not have that incredible burden. And if we do increase the population, what is going to become of our country? And who is going to feed all those people? Folks, this is The Food Chain. Michael Olson here. Today we're talking population and economy, I guess, with Vicki Markham, Director of Center for Environment and Population, and Stephen Mosher, President of Population Research Institute. Stephen, you went to China and learned all about population control. I'd like to get a quick hit on that when we get back. Do stay tuned. Well, welcome back. Michael Olson here. This is The Food Chain. Today we're talking about the economy and its impact on the population. The idea is that you and I have spent more money than we have, and so we have to go out and borrow that money from our children. $10 trillion worth right now, and by the time our government gets through bailing us out, it'll probably be 50% more than that. And of course, that's all compounded annually. So it looks like the way to save our children, to make it possible for them to pay for all of our good times, is to increase the size of our population, because I don't know how else to do it. Do you? Well, I don't know any other way to do it, come to think of it. We either increase the size of our population or foist this incredible debt burden on our children that they probably wouldn't be able to pay for hundreds of years. So it seems like that's the way we're headed, and how many people will it take to float the boat, as it were, in our country? We currently have 304 million, and maybe it'll take, 900 million? I don't know. Does anybody know? Let's go to Stephen Mosher. Do you know, Stephen?
Well, look, I mean, you got a lot of variables at work here, but I don't know how many people we have in this country. I don't think anybody does, because we do have millions of illegal immigrants. I would say that in Virginia here in the Shenandoah Valley, some of the homes that are standing empty were occupied last year and the year before by illegal immigrants who now, because of the downturn in the economy, have gone home. And so the homes that they were occupying and paying rent on or had taken out mortgages on, because no one asked them where they were from or how much income they had, are now being sold at auction. So, so this immigration problem, illegal immigration problem, works
both ways. Well, that's what I was trying to say, is that, you know, they were here, they were holding up our economy. Now, if they're going away, they're not going to help pay our bills. So we have to figure out some way of paying the bills. And we're going to have to increase the size of our population. Unless, is there any other way to do this, Vicki? Is there any other way to pay our bills?
Well, I mean, my question to you is why do you think that just increasing the population would pay the bills? And in what regard?
Because there's going to be more. The bill that we're foisting on each of our children right now is too much for each child to pay. So we're going to have more children, so each child will
more
have less
taxes
to pay.
Mm-hmm.
Now, is there some other way we could do this?
Well, I mean, my view is I think it's far more complex than that. I think that just saying that increasing the population is going to be, you know, the way to get rid of the debt, you know, and then foist it onto our children doesn't reflect.
Well, the only other way is for us to pay it, and I don't want to pay it. Do you?
Well, no, but the other way, if I could jump in, would be to increase individual productivity, you know,
right.
As we go further into the information revolution, as we increase the efficiency of industrial production in this country and service industries, the individual worker per hour is going to be producing more. You know, we have had climbing productivity over the last few years, and if that continues, then that means that every worker in America will be producing more as time goes by.
Mm-hmm.
But our problem is that our workforce is not expanding. Our problem is that we've had below replacement birth rates now since the early 1970s. We're right now back at replacement, but not far in excess of it.
So that means that if we're below that, that means each of our children are going to have to pay more than they would.
Well, yeah, I mean, you divide the debt by the number of people who are working to pay it. So I mean, you know, in a broad sense, I think you're right. But we have to hope that we can increase productivity too, and we can produce more with fewer people.
Vicky, well, do you go along with that?
It also involves having an overall strategy to reduce the debt, which means growing the economy, increasing the number of jobs that are there. There's lots of people that are out of jobs.
Well, that's what we're talking about, is increasing the number of jobs. And how else do you do that but increasing the population?
But also for the population that's here now. There's a lot of people that are here now that new people don't even have to come in for that to need to have to happen. We don't have enough. Clearly, there's not even enough jobs for the people that are here in some sectors, and that needs to be done. And, you know, there has to be less excessive spending by the government, and, you know...
Are you kidding? Less spending by the government?
Excessive. I said excessive spending, which means on the wrong things by the government. And, you know, I mean, you need, for example, if you look at the energy sector, if you want to look at that in terms of pay, you know, growing that part of the economy, because that's a popular one right now, I mean, you need to start looking at it differently so that... you know, in that field, it's obvious how you do that. You want to have more energy efficiency. You're going to probably have to have, you know, you want to respond to the need for this, for new energy technology.
Isn't what we're doing here in the United States is by having clean country, and then we're going down to the box store and buying stuff from China, and China's building, you know, a coal-burning fire plant every other minute or something like that.
Mm-hmm. Every other week.
Every other week.
Yeah.
So,
well, exactly. The government needs to change their policy to have more jobs in the U.S.
That's right. We're importing goods from China and we're exporting pollution. In a sense, but you know why is there pollution in China? Because China is hell bent on industrial development, and they do, the government, quite frankly, cares very little about whether or not they're polluting the water and the air in the course of doing that. The first thing that they want to achieve is a strong and powerful China, an economic powerhouse, a power in the world. They'll worry about the environmental stuff later. Of course, they have no free press in China, so when people do sicken and die from the excessive pollution, there are no reporters out there investigating and reporting on it, creating public demands for a change in the system. You don't make public demands in China for changing the system or the way things are done, except at great risk of being imprisoned.
And so, when it gets right down to it, when you have 1.3 billion people in a little tiny country, you can spare a few here and there,
right?
Well,
it's not a little tiny country, for goodness sake. It's the size of the United States. It does have a large population, but look, the Chinese are the most industrious, entrepreneurially minded people in the world.
Amen.
Under the right system, the rule of law, and a system where you enjoyed freedom of the press, they can solve these problems.
Hey, we're going to have to take a quick break, Stephen. Right back, folks. Do stay tuned for the end of the road. Well, the bad news is you and I owe $10 trillion, and you and I are not going to pay for it, of course, because we don't have the money and we don't want to pay for it anyway. We had the fun, and the fun's done, and so we're going to foist that $10 trillion bill off to our children. But the good news is China will lend our children the money to pay for our good times. So my question to Stephen Mosher, who spends a lot of time in China, is how can China afford to pay to loan us all this money? Is it because they have a population of 1.3 billion people and our population is only 300 million? Does that have something to do with it?
There are a lot of there are hundreds of millions of industrious Chinese turning out 80% of the goods that we find on the shelves of our big box stores, and they're making a profit on each item. So China's doing very well. They have very strict limits on lending in China, unlike in the United States. So people aren't allowed to go get credit to buy homes that they can't afford to live in. You generally have to buy large purchases in China with cash. They don't even allow credit cards in China. They do allow debit cards where the money's already in the bank and you're just spending money that you already have. So they've been being very fiscally conservative, where whereas we were being fiscally irresponsible. They've got $1 trillion in U.S. government instruments that they're holding, you know, Federal Reserve notes and the like. Mm-hmm. And so they're cash rich. And when we issue, you know, when the Federal Reserve issues notes, China is one of the major buyers. So they've got a lot of money that they earned on the American market by producing goods. So,
and of course, we're not going to pay that money back. Our children are.
Well, yeah, we're talking about 5 and 10 and 20 year repayment plans, by which time many of us will be retired.
Mm-hmm.
And our children will be working in our stead. So, mm-hmm. Yeah, we are pushing this debt back on the next generation. China's economy, despite the fact that Great Britain is now formally in recession, despite the fact that we probably are, China's economy the last quarter grew by 9%, according to government figures.
9%.
Now, you have to be a little suspicious of the government figures in China because they're not independently audited. But nonetheless, 9% is pretty good. So the Chinese economy is continuing to grow. They've been fiscally responsible. They're not over-leveraged. They're not, they have surpluses. They don't have debts.
Well, all of this is very interesting. I want to thank Vicki Markham, Director of Center for Environment and Population, for joining us today. I also want to thank Stephen Mosher, President of Population Research Institute. Let me ask both of you one final question. Do you see any way around expanding the population to pay for the bills? Is there any other way we can do it than foist it on our children? Vicki?
I'll let Stephen go first on this.
Stephen?
Well, first of all, let me apologize for joining you late. I will henceforth be known as the late Stephen Mosher.
Even the one that's on time, okay.
But, yeah, I mean, look, I think that our children do grow up to contribute more to society than they consume. I think that every stomach comes with two hands attached.
Mm-hmm.
That was actually a statement made by the late Chairman Mao Zedong, in fact, but it happens to be true.
Mao Zedong.
But and of course we can speak Chinese if you'd like, I think that a modestly growing population is a big economic benefit, a big economic plus.
Okay, Vicki, really quickly, what do you think?
Oh, I mean, I would say absolutely. I think it's going to be growing inevitably.
So we're out of time, folks. Thanks for joining us. This has been the Food Chain. See you next week for more What's Eating What Radio.
Been listening to the award-winning Food Chain Show with Michael Olson. If your friends missed the show today, tell them to log on to the radio page at www.metrofarm.com for a listen. Now go out and find some food with a farmer's face on it and live.